and welcome to the Fan Pregame Friday night of a long weekend. There's only a few of us in this building. Let's hold it down here, Justin.
We had our choice of the parking lot today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I honestly could have parked like horizontally through the spots and left my doors open. But nonetheless, we're here to break down a big day, day seven of the Olympics. We're going to talk to Adam Stanley. He'll take us around the golf course in about 5 minutes.
There are some people here because Jays and Yankees beginning a series today. Could be quite the juxtaposition between two teams with different ambitions for the last 2 months of the year. But we'll focus on what matters. That's the Blue Jays with Chris Black, Sportsnet producer at 6:30.
Okay, a couple big headline things from Pevry. Canada basketball now 3-0 in the group stage. The win over Spain. We're waiting to get confirmation exactly who they'll play next. Canada won another medal in the pool. Kylie Moss won a bronze medal and bronze for Felix and Gabby in mixed doubles as well. So, and you know, big day for some of the Canadians.
It was, and I want, because I was inspired by our conversation with Brittany McLean yesterday. I want to talk about Kylie Moss for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to throw it out there that she's the most underrated Olympian of our lifetime.
Canadian Olympian.
Let's focus U.S. Canada. Athletes with five medals probably get more attention than Kylie Moss. And that's my point. If you look at our history at the Olympics, individual athletes, only five have won more Olympic medals than Moss. Penny Oleksiak has seven, only two more than Moss. Charles Amlan has six. Mm-hmm. Cindy Clawson was six. Andre de Grasse was six. He can add to that. And Clara Hughes with summer and winter duty has six. So she joined a group that has, you know, a bunch of hockey players. Jayna Hafford and Haley Wickenheiser have five. Scott Moyer and Tessa Virtue have five. But what I'm saying is this accumulation of five medals, I think, is a little bit understated given 100%. That, yeah, maybe she doesn't have the golds that kind of lift up, you know, your decorated history. But if you're two behind the most decorated Olympian of all time and only five in our history have more, I feel like Moss deserves a little bit of credit. So I think based on, you know, telling the right stories and giving attention where it deserves, Summer McIntosh may have five before this is all over, may have 10 before her career is done. But I think Kylie Moss deserves a lot of credit for getting back in the pool, third Olympics, winning another medal in her third Olympics in the pool. It's a great story, and I think she deserves her recognition.
Yeah, we talk a lot about like the young athletes up and coming, and obviously Kylie Moss is in her third, as you mentioned. She's 28 years old, gets the bronze today, and five medals over three games is just consistency to me. She talked about it. I know Arash Madani sat down with her before the Olympics, and she talked about how sometimes she feels like the veteran, but also feels like this is still a new experience for her. That's probably really valuable for someone like Summer McIntosh, who's 17. And has already been to another Olympics, but just going through the ups and downs of swimming and competing and still being able to medal after all of these appearances, like Kylie, and I know Kylie a little bit personally because she's one of Brittany's best friends. So I hear from Brittany about how great Kylie is, and she just seems like she's so level-headed. And I don't know if this is going to be her last Olympics or not, but the way she performs and takes care of herself, like that's what you want to see for the next wave of swimmers. And I think what you're saying when you mentioned that, you know, maybe she's one of the most underrated Olympians, like look at all the swimmers just this Olympics alone. Like they are hauling in the medals for Canada. I know that there's still a lot to be competed in, but, you know, it's a really great perspective of how talented we are at swimming. Like we are a swimming country.
And it says something not to leave Moss behind to talk about the shiny new toy that is Summer McIntosh, but it says a lot about Summer McIntosh's ability that, there's staying power. You can go to three games, you can be there, but it can be fleeting at the same time. And yet the 17-year-old who is almost on this list already of the top and most decorated athletes of all time can really put her stamp on not just her Olympic career at 17, but put the path in place, I guess, to becoming the best ever, because there is something special about, you know, having that huge haul. Penny Oleksiak being the most decorated Olympian. Yeah, she's been in three and she's one in three, or she's actually only one in two, but you can really make your mark in one. Kylie Moss is showing that you can have longevity, and Summer McIntosh is showing that you can have that splash. But can she be both Moss and Oleksiak in that she has the splashy moments and she has the staying power, and we'll see where that takes Summer McIntosh.
Summer has three Olympic medals already, and she's been to two games. Obviously, she's winning them this one alone. I really feel like it's not a stretch to say that she'll lap everybody, no pun intended, and maybe be the most decorated Olympian of all time for Canada. She's got three, and Penny has seven, and Summer's 17 years old. So as she keeps going, we'll see that name top.
Somehow, I think Scott Moyer and Tessa Virtue are also underrated. They've been to three Olympics, competed in three Olympics, three gold, two silver. Basically, every time they went out there, mm-hmm. it was first or second. I know they're like big celebrities, but I even feel like they deserve more credit for what they were able to accomplish between 2010 and 2018.
All right. Adam Stanley joins us now, our golf reporter for Sportsnet. Let's see if we can bring home some more hardware between the Canadians. Adam, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
We're doing well. I just can't stop watching television. Like, it's just, I am a slug on my couch, and then I come to work and I sit at my desk and I watch more and more sports. And, you know, the golf has been starting a little early for me, so I don't know how your sleep schedule's going, but it's been awesome to see the start of all of the Olympics for day seven, and we got some Canadians in the mix.
I have a two-year-old, so my sleep schedule basically is non-existent. But we do have Corey Connors is kind of right there, and it's been unique to hear more from Corey over the last couple of days, just about his game plan for Le Golf National. If you look at who's right there in the lead, there's a three-way tie at the top, and it's like flushers only. You know, it's Xander, it's Hideki Matsuyama, and it's Tommy Fleetwood. Like, these guys are just your ball striker's favorite ball striker kind of situation. And that's what we've got with Corey. He's right there. He said afterwards today, you know, he's just a couple inches away from hanging a four or five or six under par score on the leaderboard. He's just missing a few putts. Like, he's dialed in off the tee, dialed in with the irons as well. He's just now hoping to see a few putts fall in over the weekend. Obviously, a top 10 would be nice, but a top 10 at the Olympics really, really means nothing. From fourth until 60th means nothing, and he's just going to try to race for the podium over the next 2 days.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm looking at Connors, obviously, where he is, T13. That's felt like a familiar position here at big tournaments of late, and that's great. I mean, you're racking up the dollars, not at this event, but you're racking up the dollars doing that on the PGA Tour. But it feels like something has to change for him to leap and break through into that real top tier, and it feels like maybe it's too far gone at this point. I mean, chasing those three who are six shots ahead with two rounds to go, it's going to be tough. But you mentioned the putts. Does it also require, maybe they start rolling in for Connors, does it also require something from the top? Schauffele, Matsuyama, Fleetwood, all three of them faltering in some way?
Yeah, I mean, Corey's what? He's six shots back right now. You know, if he hangs a six under on the board tomorrow, Saturday for moving day, you know, that's great. But the three guys at the top, you know, Hideki was, I think he was seven or eight under par until he made a double bogey on his final hole of the day. So I don't really foresee those guys falling back at all. The golf course is very receptive for scoring. Corey was asked on the first day, are the scores pretty much exactly what you expected them to be? And he said yes. So yeah, it will require a little bit of a fallback from some of the guys at the top. And you look at those names, especially Xander. I mean, he's a two-time major champion. He's just had, you know, an incredible summer. I don't really see him falling back. So Corey's going to really have to put the pedal down over the next 2 days. You know, the good news is that he keeps giving himself chances. You know, I think if he putts above average, you know, he's firmly going to be in that conversation on Sunday for a medal. If he putts average, he's going to have, you know, to go super low on Sunday to be in the mix for a medal. But we saw that last year. I mean, Rory Sabatini shot 61, not last year, but the last time that the Olympics happened in Tokyo. Shot 61, you know, ripped up the leaderboard and won silver. So it certainly is possible, but a lot has to go right for Corey Connors and a lot has to kind of go wrong for the guys who have already started to separate themselves at this competition.
It's good reminding of Rory Sabatini. I don't think anyone had that in the card. Sabatini finishing second, getting a silver medal last time out. Schauffele thing is interesting, right? Because I think everyone tries to get into the head of Xander Schauffele and his association with Patrick Cantlay, who didn't want to wear the hat at the Ryder Cup. Like, what does Schauffele actually care about? And yet, you know, if you're putting him in the pile with Cantlay, he's playing and trying to defend an Olympic gold medal that has no money attached to it. So I guess I'll ask you, like, what matters to Xander Schauffele? And is the Olympics, like, top of the pile when it in terms of priority for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think the curious thing about Xander is that he treats a lot of his kind of golfing efforts really, really close to the chest. Like, he has gained so many yards this year, and he has just added so much speed. And he has not, like, answered that question at all, even though he's been in every press conference at every major tournament, you know, for the last 10, 12 weeks, all year long, right? He's just kind of, like, dropped in little things, being like, yeah, you know, I've been working hard, that sort of thing. So I think winning matters to him. And I think because his father and him have such a unique and like good relationship, you know, his father was obviously on track to be an Olympian himself. He got hit by a drunk driver when his father was 20, actually en route to training for him to be an Olympian, lost the sight in, I think, his right eye. So, you know, the fact that Xander has kind of lived his father's dream, won an Olympic gold medal, now obviously this year has won the two majors as well, and has kind of done almost everything that there is to do, except for maybe, you know, ascend to world number one, that sort of thing. Yeah, I think the Olympics are pretty high up on his priority list. And certainly, you know, it kind of is country dependent and individual dependent where people would kind of rank an Olympic medal as compared to the major championships. I think this generation, obviously, the four majors are the four majors, and they've really separated themselves from everybody else. But if there's a 10 or 11 year old from, you know, a certain country that maybe doesn't get to watch the Masters or the US Open or whatever it is, but they do get to watch the Olympic competition and they see golf and they see what it means to that person, you know, it's going to mean something to the next kind of two or three generations as we continue with Olympic golf kind of in this every 4 year competition.
Yeah, it's nice to have it back. I mean, I can imagine there's a stretch of time where no golfers really thought about the Olympics. We went like 100 years without being an Olympic sport. So now you could have the younger generation thinking about winning a gold medal for the country, also wanting to win a Masters or win an Open. So I think that's going to be nice to follow throughout the next 20 years when golfers come up and say, oh, I saw somebody win Olympic gold. I want to do that. I know that you're not in Paris, but I wonder your perspective of the Canadians themselves.
I wish.
Yeah, well, me too.
You're going to be at Cabot Bordeaux.
Yeah, we can ask you about Cabot Bordeaux.
Next week, Stanley. Okay.
We're going to get there. It's on our list.
Yes.
But the Canadians in general, just like representing our country and going over to Paris, and Nick Taylor and Corey Connors, and it was tight to the end for the decision of who would be going. With these two, their pride to be Canadians representing us overseas. Like, I see the Instagram, the social media, they look like they're having a blast. What does it mean to them?
Yeah, I mean, Corey and Nick got to go in the opening ceremonies, which is incredible. Obviously, you know, Corey's a two-time Olympian now, but, you know, he played in Tokyo where basically nothing was able to happen. And now he's got his wife there, and Nick has his wife, and their whole family is around. And they're kind of doing the regular thing. And I think that that's really, really cool. I mean, as someone who's covered these guys for a decade plus, to kind of bear witness to them, have this opportunity to walk in the opening ceremonies, to hold the flag, to be in the mix with all these great athletes. I think it's just awesome. It's such a big moment, I think, especially for Nick. I mean, Nick's 36 years old. He was not shy to say, like, it's probably going to be this one or not. And the fact that he got off to such a good start at the beginning of this PGA Tour season and managed to hold on for dear life kind of through the summertime was really, really exciting for him. You know, the opportunity to be able to go and do this and have fun and have the excitement for Canada, to represent Canada. He's done that a lot. He actually held the Olympic torch in 2010 when the Winter Olympics were in Vancouver. At the time, he was the number one world ranked amateur. So he was a stud at that point. So he got to run his 200 meters in Abbotsford and kind of hold the Olympic torch. And now to actually be an Olympian himself is a full circle moment. So he's been very excited about having kind of that. Mm-hmm. And then Corey is, as this country's top ranked male golfer, I mean, obviously, I think it would be odd if he wasn't in the Olympics. I know obviously he had to do the exact thing that he did, finish in the exact spot that he did at the US Open in order to earn this spot. But it makes total sense that these two guys are there. They're having fun at restaurants. They're enjoying the sights. They were in the opening ceremonies. You know, now obviously they have a job to do, but I think this is an incredibly special moment for them. It's a special moment for their family. Corey's wife is about 6 months pregnant, so this is a bit of a baby moon for them. And they're just having a great time, not only representing Canada, but having an opportunity to compete at an incredible venue in Le Golf National and go out and try to win a medal.
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned the venue, because I was trying to figure out, like, who's got the edge here? You know, Schauffele won an Olympic gold, so, like, does he have that edge? But then I looked at Tommy Fleetwood. He's won the French Open at the same course, starred in Europe's Ryder Cup in, was 2017 or 18, a year later, and he, like, was the superstar, wins that. So, like, is this his course? Like, does he have the advantage now because he's, like, won here?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of admitted himself, like, that was, you know, a half decade ago, right? So it's not like that the venue changes year after year for the French Open. So there is some, like, installed good memories that he can obviously lean on. And the strategy, the game plan hasn't changed. Like, I think there's water on 10 or 11 of the holes at this golf course. So, like, you got to be so precise off the tee. You got to be so precise with the irons. The last two holes, 17 and 18, are ranked as the two hardest holes on the golf course. So even if you're having a great day for, you know, 95% of your round, you still could be, you know, completely skunked by the time you get to the last two holes. So strategy-wise, game plan-wise, somebody like Tommy Fleetwood, obviously, you know, certainly has the opportunity to kind of dig into kind of past success to be able to have even more success this week. You know, John Rahm as well. Like, John Rahm was a complete stud at the Ryder Cup. Like, he's right there. He's shouting, he's breathing down the necks of these guys. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a move tomorrow as well. And kind of, as I mentioned off the top, like, the everyone who's close to the top of this leaderboard, like, flushers only. Like, you, like, it's a ball striking extravaganza right now. So anyone who's near the top, you know, not really surprised at all to see them.
I think Tommy's got to get this one so we can keep talking about how he can't win on tour, but
on the PG,
has the big win at the Olympics. I think that would make a lot of sense. I think one of the favorites, despite what nationality you are, is Tom Kim. And that's because, if you don't know the Tom Kim story, if he medals, he will avoid military service in Korea, which is like something that you hear about every now and then. And you're like, yeah, good for him. I want that to happen for him because, yeah, you'd like to see him continue to compete at the highest level and not have to go do something at home. But maybe it doesn't matter as much to Tom. But I'll ask you, like, how much does that matter and how much support will he have knowing that he has a bit of a different story than, say, Rory McIlroy, who's, you know, got the world by the tail, of course.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two sides of the coin. Number one is that Tom Kim's only 22 years old, so he certainly has other opportunities to win this medal and kind of avoid the military service. But as it stands right now, you know, this multi-time PGA Tour winner, who is an absolute lock for Mike Weir's President's Cup team, who is a young star, who was in the Netflix series, like, I could go on and on and on, you know, face of global golf. He was in, you know, he was on the cover of South Korea's edition of GQ. Like, there is a lot of things going for Tom Kim, but because he is an able-bodied male under the age of 35, yeah, unless he wins a medal, he's going to have to do this 21-month mandatory military service for South Korea. So a lot of layers to this. You know, he's tied for fifth right now, so I think this story was kind of bubbling under the surface a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, because he's in the mix for a medal through two rounds, it's pretty prominent. Like, and you know, he's gonna gain a lot of fans if he manages to do this. He's really trying to compartmentalize. Like, he was asked probably 10 questions and he was very curt about all of within all of his responses. Like, he basically didn't want it to become, you know, his identity for the week. I'm going to go out and play golf. I'm going to see where I land. I've got a lot of years left, blah, 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 blah. So for all the things that he's like trying to say and treat the week as such and all these things, like, everybody else knows that this is a gigantic week for him. So certainly, to your point specifically, you know, a lot of people are cheering for him because, I mean, it is what it is. A lot of countries have mandatory military service. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of them are as robust and intensive as this South Korean situation is. And we saw it with Sangmun Bae. Sangmun came out, won twice on the PGA Tour in, you know, 2014, 2015, around then. Had to go back home, do the military service, and basically has lost his game. And he was ranked as high as 40th or something like that in the world, and now he's 600th and will probably never get back to how he was. So, yeah, it's a big deal this week for sure.
We're chatting with Sportsnet's Adam Stanley. Okay, let's shift over to the women's game. Their tournament starts off next week. Obviously, Brooke just coming off, I think it was T8 at the CB Women's Open, and she's going to her third Olympics. She's a fifth favorite right now to win the gold medal. I wonder just your expectations and her mindset going into this with the knowledge that she's right there in the mix, but hasn't been able to really grasp it yet.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's situational because Brooke is kind of like the victim of Brooke's own success, mm-hmm. right? Like, she's got seven top 10 finishes this year. She's six on tour in greens of regulation. She's about the same in scoring average. You know, she finished tied for third at a major. Like, I could go on and on and on about her accomplishments, but because no one else has ever even like sniffed mm-hmm. where she's at right now, it's kind of like, hey, what's up with Brooke? But the Olympic medal is probably the thing that if it's all said and done and she doesn't have one, people are probably going to look back and be like, hey, this Canadian, take golfer out of the equation. Like, this individual Canadian athlete probably should have won an Olympic medal at some point. You know, Riviera in 2028, you know, that golf course is certainly built for her skill set, but this golf course is built for it too. You know, as I mentioned now, 2, 3, 4 times, like, ball strikers have success at Le Golf National, and Brooke Henderson is one of the best female ball strikers on the planet. So if he can, if she can kind of do the thing that she is known for, I wouldn't be surprised if she has success this week. A lot of the same kind of situation, just like Corey Connors. Like, Brooke Henderson needs to putt above average to have a real chance to win a medal. Now she can do it. She's ultra streaky with the putter, and I wouldn't be surprised if she, you know, admits as such in a pre-tournament, like, this is the thing I need to really concentrate on, blah, 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 blah. But that's kind of the common thought for her. So, yes, Canadian individual athlete who's an absolute superstar who should hopefully win a medal at some point. This is a great opportunity for her to do exactly that. She's got the skill set to have success. She needs to work on the short game and really, really, really prioritize rest. As soon as the CPKC Women's Open finished, she returned home to Smiths Falls. She's hanging out at home. She's really trying to come down from a crazy, crazy week at the CPKC Women's Open. She's going to fly over Saturday night, get there Sunday, take a day and a half just to kind of, you know, get yourself just situationally ready for an Olympics and a golf tournament, watch the men, and then kind of take all systems go from there. But the golf course fits Brooke Henderson's game. Now it's just a matter of executing on that game plan.
Well, Justin and I aren't headed to Paris this weekend, but we're headed to Muskoka, and we want to know if you have any connections or any courses we should golf. Yeah, it's like, help us get a tee time. I can't get a tee time.
Recommendation.
Where should we golf?
I could maybe help you get on Taboo.
Oh,
maybe,
man.
We'll
Adam,
after the fact, we'll fire a note or two.
I gotta be a little bit like
that. Was
who's we? Like the two of you? You guys are.
We got two more. We got two more. Okay, we need a golf time this weekend.
We'll see what we could do.
It's Justin's cottage weekend.
I'm embarrassed.
Long weekend in Muskoka. Yeah. Let's see what maybe I can help out. All
right, you're the best, Adam.
Okay.
Regardless if you get us a tea time or not. All right, thanks so much for joining us, honestly. But have a wonderful weekend this weekend. Enjoy it. And then hopefully we see some more Canadian medals. And Brooke just around the corner. I'm sure we'll chat before then.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Adam Stanley.
We're brutal. Very quickly.
I was just asking.
You threw it out there. Very quickly on Brooke. The reduced field is an interesting thing for the golf events of the Olympics, right?
Yes.
Because, you take out, 30 Americans who are really good, and maybe it gives a better shot to a Tom Kim or Corey Connors, whatever. I feel like that should help Brooke Henderson a lot because she's racking up top tens.
Oh, she's fifth best odds right now to
win. Of U.S. golfers. A bunch of Asian golfers. There can only be so many from so many countries. Therefore, I feel like the reduced field may help someone like Brooke Henderson more than anyone. So we'll see.
Well, she's got the fifth best odds right now to win gold. So that, like, realistically, a medal should be probably
on the table
for Brooke.
Definitely attainable.
And that was a really big week last week. Obviously, Brooke Brigade and CPKC Women's Canadian Open was a lot. Always like Brooke. So hopefully that time at home, she resets, she heads over to Paris, and she can play her game. But it's good to hear from Adam. This is a course she can win at. So let's see it. I want to see it.
Very quickly, because we got a hard out today. Let's tee up Yankees and Blue Jays tonight. Kevin Gausman versus Marcus Stroman. That's an interesting matchup. Of course, Yankees -165 favorites. Blue Jays have won the last three Gausman starts, but he's kind of failed to just shut down the opposition, like, very cleanly over the last little bit. Six of his last eight, he's given up three earned or more, did pitch a complete game last time out. Sort of the same story for Marcus Stroman, who has got an ERA over 5 in each of the last 2 months. So I'm looking at the over-under. I think over 9 is a decent bet tonight. The Yankees are absolutely mashing it, and Marcus Stroman has been gettable. So my pick today will be the Jays and Yankees over 9.
I'm going to ride the hot hand. Vladdy, home run. He likes big moments. He had all this talk about Yankee Stadium. Like, tonight, a Vladdy home run. He's pretty inevitable right now. I also don't want to give this one to you, but I'm going to do it. It's sad. Judge home run. He's got 5 bombs against Gausman. You could parlay those two probably, but it's only +176. But my Vlad one is what I really believe in tonight.
I might do that parlay. That's crazy. Vlad is like one of the hottest hitters, if not the.
And
+420. Yeah. Judge, who hits a home run every single night.
Yeah.
Down to +175 to hit a home run is a crazy price.
It is. Okay, we'll keep the Blue Jays talk going on the other side of the break with Chris Black of Sportsnet. We'll get you teed up for tonight. It's Blue Jays-Yankees, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. See you in a minute.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back on the Fans Regame. Sportsnet 590. The Fan. A little later, you'll see Blue Jays Yankees here on Sportsnet, and you'll hear it on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. It's Gausman and it's Stroman.
Two guys we know.
Two familiar faces.
Two guys we've loved.
Yeah. Well, you don't love Kevin Gausman anymore? That was a past tense.
I guess I grouped them in sort of sloppily there. I think I love them both. Love Gausman for what he's doing now. Loved Marcus Stroman. Loved Marcus Stroman for what he did. How about that?
There you go.
I'm not the guy who turned on Stroman. I know it was an ugly exit.
You're digging yourself a hole here.
It was an ugly exit. I will say, one of the most devastated I've ever been in terms of sports fandom is when he got hurt in spring training and everyone was so excited about that year, justifiably so. And it was like, that was one of the most devastating injuries, I think, in the city's history. No messy exit could take that away.
Is it height doesn't measure heart?
That was probably one of the things I didn't like about
We have a first for the Fan pregame. We stole Chris Black from Jays Talk Plus.
I don't know how we did that.
He is now joining our show. I think he's on the 400 headed north. Chris Black, how are you?
I'm further than that. I'm on Highway 26.
Oh.
Making my way up to Collingwood.
You're way out there.
Okay.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're so happy to have you. We're honored that you would come on our show, and we don't talk about anything that's analytical, really, so different for you. Vibes.
You know what I'm a huge fan of? You being shamelessly willing to ask Adam for any kind of golf course. Speaking of someone who is shameless when it comes to getting on golf courses, I full respect to you, Ailish.
Okay, behind the scenes, Justin and I off the air, I said, I'm going to ask Adam about Muskoka. And then he said, you go ahead. So then I look like the bad guy. But really, realistically, Justin also wanted to ask. So I took one for the team.
It was a recommendation
I panicked. I didn't know how to word it properly. I don't ask people
It was a slip of the tongue.
All right, you big golf guy, though, Chris Black.
What I am known for is golfing with on-air Sportsnet Blue Jays baseball staff and losing.
Okay.
So Caleb Joseph has knocked me around.
He's good.
Caleb Joseph is very good. Mm-hmm. Justin Morneau's knocked me around. Like, they're all playing with pro athletes is not actually all that fun because it's just like, oh, look at their hand-eye coordination. Oh, they don't chunk chips. They don't three-putt. It's like, yeah, it's a blast.
But it's actually my nightmare to play with people that are like legitimate athletes. Like Ailish played in the Pro-Am for the Canadian Open this year and I didn't get an invite, of course, but if I had, I might have declined.
You should have asked for an invite like I did.
I don't know if I could handle doing it. I honestly don't think I could play next to a PGA Tour professional and look at myself in the mirror later on that night.
Yeah, the pressure is just overwhelming, but they don't feel pressure. Like if the worst thing you can do is put money on or even a small amount of money on lunch on it, and then you've really got no shot. But we are not pro athletes, Justin. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, I'm going to check to see if Highway 26 connects to Taboo and Muskoka. We'll send you an invite at the end of the interview. Okay, let's talk some Blue Jays. Obviously, this has been a busy week for everybody. Some new guys. Let's just go broad. Like, who are you most excited to see over the next couple of months, whether they're developing within the minors leagues or coming up to the Blue Jays and making an impact? It's about, like, fresh starts, and we might get to see some here.
A few different people, but I think, to be honest, Class A, like a switch hitter with speed, like to me, like those are two areas I think the Blue Jays are kind of interested in kind of adding to. I think they want to be a more dynamic team in terms of speed. I think you could see that in a few guys that they picked up, and I think they do want to get either more left-handed or adding some switch hitters. Like if you just go back and look at the last few years, they haven't really had a switch hitting regular since 2019, like since the Justin Smoak, Freddie Galvis, like Kendrys Morales days, right? So a switch hitter with speed, that kind of interests me. I also think, like, I think we could be, I joked about this on social media, I've joked about this with Blake before, like there's a free agent switch hitter that I think could really look good in Blue Jays blue next year, and that's Anthony Santander from the Orioles. So, like, I think, like, just adding some new dimensions to this team, and that's what I'm kind of interested to see in the offseason.
So Class A has obviously got the, like, the thing that's obvious, which is the speed. Loperfido is probably more of a generalist. If you're looking to evaluate him, and he's going to get some run here, clearly, like, what are the markers? What are the statistics? What are the things that might not be seen through just simple box scores? Because this is going to be a small sample, but if you're trying to pick up on things that are important with him, what are you looking for?
Yeah, like, he's a guy who ticks off all the, like, metric boxes, right? Like, he swings the bat hard, which actually isn't, like, as we're learning, this is the first year that bat speed's been public. So we're kind of learning that, like, yeah, it's good to have bat speed, but it's not the be-all and end-all, right? We've learned that, like, Luis Arraez has the slowest bat speed in the big leagues, but, like, that doesn't matter because he can square up the baseball anytime he wants, right? And some guys have great bat speed but don't make great contact all the time. So Loperfido already slots in, like, his average bat speed would be third on the team just behind Vladdy and Barger. So there's that. His sprint speed right now, he's the fastest guy on the Blue Jays. So there's that as well. So I think he's got some, he's toolsy, right? I think that's probably the best way of putting it. Now he's got to relate, you've got to translate tools to the big leagues. So that's the biggest thing, right? Can he translate tools into production? We've seen some guys come through. I hate using this name because people instantly almost, like, kind of chuckle. But a few years ago, a toolsy guy was brought in, right? Derek Fisher was kind of toolsy. That didn't go so well. But Loperfido, I like a lot more than Fisher for a whole lot of reasons. But so, yeah, can he translate kind of bat speed, speed, pretty good defense as well in the outfield? Can he translate that into production? Like, these are the things we're going to be watching over the rest of 24.
So, you know, by bringing in 13 prospects, like, you're, in reality, you're bringing in a bunch of lottery tickets. And Loperfido and Class A might be more than that, maybe more defined, maybe less gamble or ceiling floor, whatever you want to call it. But if you were just picking up a bunch of lottery tickets and you had to attach something to it, whether it is the bat speed or whether it is speed or whatever, what would you be looking for? Like, if you're just looking for a very basic metric for guys and single A ball, like, what is the thing that you would go out and get, and how does that contrast comparatively towards or to what the Blue Jays went out and got? And maybe we don't know enough about what the prospects really do at that baseline level in terms of what the Blue Jays actually received in return for all these players and rentals, but what would you have went out and got, and how would that compare to what the Blue Jays actually brought in?
That's a very nuanced question for a Friday afternoon in an empty OMP building.
This is Jay's Talk Plus After Dark.
Listen, giving it a shot.
I like it. No, to be honest, more than tools, like, to be honest, like, I want to see production at minor league level. Now, what does that mean? Like, something that stands out to me always, that's, like, the first thing, again, like, some fans might quasi roll their eyes at this, but, like, the first thing that stood out when Alejandro Kirk first came up to the big leagues, like, when you looked at his minor league numbers, was his strikeout to walk ratio, like, more walks than strikeouts. And that, to me, is, like, an easy marker of, like, hey, is that ratio good? If that's really good, that suggests the real knowledge of the strike zone. And if you see that on multiple levels, you kind of feel like they can figure it out and have a good sense of the strike zone. Now, on the other side, like, if someone has a really bad ratio like that, you really worry about them at the big league level. So that's one that stands out to me. But it does, we're entering into a new world too, where, like, this is the first year that there's a lot of, like, minor league data where you can now, like, when these guys get traded and show up on your favorite team's roster, you can, like, on public websites, you can go see how hard they throw their fastball and what's the spin rate on their fastball and what do their breaking pitches do. Like, it's kind of a new world like that. So, like, we have way more information with these minor leaguers than we ever have. Like, I honestly think it's easier now to look at pitchers in the minors and, like, instantly be like, oh yeah, those pitches are going to translate to the majors really well. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing pitchers move up quickly. Like, AAA, one of the things we're realizing now is AAA baseball the pitching isn't all that great because guys aren't staying very long at that level. Like, teams are bringing them up quickly because they know, like, oh, yeah, this pitch moves in this kind of way. Like, this guy has two major league pitches. And so they're moving up the system quicker than they probably ever have.
We're chatting with Chris Black of Sportsnet ahead of Yankees Blue Jays. That looks like it's going to be a bit of a delayed start. It looks like there's going to be some rain in the area. So we'll keep you updated when we know more. Okay, so I have this app on my phone that tells you, like, what you were doing a year ago, what, you know, what you're tweeting, pictures, et cetera. And we were almost a year now to the peak Babe Schneider.
Are you tweeting about Babe Schneider?
I was tweeting Babe Schneider, and it was a pandemonium. Everybody was all over Davis Schneider. And I wonder for you, like, what has changed? Because obviously his production isn't the same, but we also have, you know, more new shiny toys. We've got Spencer Horowitz. We've got, I guess, some other new faces. But has the league maybe figured out Davis Schneider? Is there something that he can do to try to get back to some of the level of production? Obviously not Babe Schneider, but something close.
Yeah, it was that series at Fenway Park a year ago was just unreal, right? And it was like the other part that makes it great, and just like a quick shout out to our colleague Dan Schulman doing basketball in Paris. But like when you can hear in his voice when he's legitimately excited calling something, and he was legitimately excited when Davis Schneider was doing what he was doing a year ago. But like, so it's, I don't know, with Davis, I think there's something that happens quite often in baseball, and maybe more than any other sport, where you can come and be productive and do really well, but the league figures you out, right? And I think that's kind of what's happened to Davis Schneider. I think the league has kind of adjusted to him. And so I think, like, what that is, like, he's been more than willing to, like, kind of say that, you know, the high fastball has been a weakness for him, has been a blind spot. So he's at that point where he's like 500, 600 plate appearances into his career, where the league has adjusted. The league has kind of figured him out. We saw Bo Bichette go through this. We saw Vladimir Guerrero go through this. So, like, he's got to figure out what he's going to do to change how the league attacks him. Now, I heard Barker on earlier today with Blair, and, like, he might be right that maybe he tinkers a little bit too much. Maybe he's just got to stick with something that works, right, and stick with one swing or stick with one stance, whatever. But, man, it would be really, really hard to not tinker in that league because baseball is just incredibly frustrating. We've always said, like, the pitching now is better than it's ever been. So I think he'll figure it out. Like, I wrote yesterday, I think a guy like him who's produced at the level he did for, like, whatever that was, a month or two, like, he deserves a benefit of the doubt just for having a ceiling that high. But yeah, he's fighting it right now, but he's fighting it in a way that, like, so many baseball players have fought before, like in their first year or two in the bigs as they're trying to get established.
I love that you mentioned the Schulman excitement because we heard that today when RJ Barrett hit that late three in the win over Spain. Last one for you, because yeah, you got to get your weekend started here if you're on your way up north. Jeff Passan was on the station this week and was talking about Vlad and, you know, why you can pay a first baseman or cannot pay a first baseman this amount of money or what have you. For the layman, Chris, like, why does it matter what position Vladdy plays when his value to the Blue Jays may be different than any other organization?
That's a fair question to ask, to be honest. Like, the easy answer is, like, the value of a guy at that position. It's easier to replace his offense at that position. You can find somebody who can hit 25 home runs with a 750 OPS easier at first base than you can at any other position. So in the value over replacement player, and I know that makes some people roll their eyes as well, but that's what it is. It's, in theory, his offense is easier to replace. But having said that, like, it's all about which Guerrero do you think you're getting for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, right? If it's the Vladdy that we've seen this year, that's probably closer to 2021 than any other year that we've seen from Guerrero, then you do want to sign that guy to an extension. It's got to be at the right number. But if it's one that, like, but you're looking at it and he's only been elite in two of his X amount of years so far in the bigs, like, that, then it becomes a tougher question. I worry about how to invest my small amounts of money for, like, a small time frame. So, like, I would not know how to value somebody for a 10-year contract. But like, that's why the GMs and presidents around the league get paid big bucks. But yeah, like, if this is the Vladdy that we're going to see for the next 5-6 years, and to be honest, like, it looks like he's figuring something out. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Blake this week, and I said, it kind of reminds me, there's a scene, and I'm dating myself, but there's a scene in The Matrix where I think it's Lawrence Fishburne is like, he's like looking, he's watching Neo. I can't remember if he's training or if he's fighting one of the guys, but he's like, he's starting to believe. And like, to be honest, like, that's what I see from Guerrero. Like, he's like realizing, oh, I can be 2021 Vladdy again. He's realizing that he can do damage hitting the ball to right center field all the time. And it's like, when he has this kind of confidence, when he's like, there's even a bit of like the Juan Soto struts and the Juan Soto like taking pitches, like that kind of deal with Vladdy right now. If that's the Guerrero, I think you do find a way to sign him to an extension. Like, because he is, like you said, Justin, like, he's our Vladdy. He means more to this city than he does anywhere else. So I would find a way to do it.
Yeah, and by all accounts, it sounds like he loves it here and would want to stay too. And Kevin Kiermaier was on Blair and Barker and said, pay the man, like, if I was a GM. So, I mean, you just listen to Kevin Kiermaier. How can you not? And you look in those eyes, right?
Absolutely. And Kevin, my wife would never have any problem looking into his eyes. So we can just leave it there.
We are the same. Okay, Chris. Well, this was great. I'm really glad that we got to have you on the show. Please come back anytime and enjoy your weekend. Maybe we'll see you on the course. I'll send you an invite.
I will come back anytime. We will golf at some point. And I will say Muskoka, great value golf course. Not getting paid to say this, but I will take any free rounds. Segan Valley Golf Course is a really great value up there.
There you go. I think that was the question that we meant.
That's what I meant to ask. Okay, I panicked. Yeah. I panicked. All right, thanks, Chris. Enjoy your weekend. We appreciate your time.
See you guys. You too.
All right, that's Chris Black from Sportsnet.
Doesn't that kind of scare you? The valuation? Yeah, it scares me. I am scared. The valuation of Vladdy conversation scares me. Because if we look at the Blue Jays and we look at, we'll bring up Kevin Barker again. Kevin Barker likes talking about khakis and spreadsheets and computers and data and valuations and what everything should be for a baseball team that functions the way I guess it should or the way a computer would function it. Mm-hmm. And if you're putting that sort of like ceiling on what a position is worth or what a player is worth at a certain position, are you going to be able to reconcile with Vladdy having the sort of intangible that is different? He is, you know, he is one of the best first basemen in baseball.
Currently, he is the best first baseman in baseball.
One of the most valuable players in baseball. But if you're like, well, he's not a shortstop, so we can't do this. Like, are you just going to talk yourself out of doing the right thing, doing right by the franchise, fan base, the player who deserves to be looked at as more than just a player that plays a certain position? That would be my worry at this moment.
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to see beyond what the spreadsheet says and make the decision that makes the most sense? And it might not be to sign Vladdy, because Vladdy might be like, no, I want this, and that doesn't make sense. And you're like, okay. But if you're going to base it all off position, I think you're missing the forest for the trees a little bit with Vladdy Guerrero Jr.
Forest for the trees. You once said that on the Fan Morning Show, and we had to like look it up, like what that meant.
Whenever I say something that's like even like trying to be smart, you like stop. It's like a big surprise.
Well, it was just really good. Just
concerns me.
Great points.
My normal analysis. Thank you.
Okay. But I wanted to do something fun here at the end of the show because it's Friday and of the long weekend. And yesterday we had good spirited debate about what Olympic sport you'd want to add to the Olympics if you could.
Did we have like a conclusion to that? Did you have your
bowling? I put it on my social media page and what am I, like a business?
You and kind of are a business.
And a lot of great responses, so keep that coming. But today we did a little bit of a different twist on it. Was there are a lot of Olympic sports that no longer exist.
Okay.
From very long time ago. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to give you a name of a sport, and you're going to tell me if that is a real or not real former Olympic sport. And before you answer, there's a disclaimer, because the Olympics are a billion years old. And there was also this thing called the World Fair, which we're not going to get into the history lesson of it, but it was kind of like a sport, had a sporting component.
Okay. And so
just hold on.
It was like countries meeting up we'll do some sports.
So if that sport was also at the World Fair, I'm kind of counting it because it was kind of the Olympics.
Okay, it is counting.
At the time, yes. And the first Olympics we know is like ancient Greece. But and so it can be kind of from any period of time. First modern day Olympics in 1896.
Okay.
If it was a sport that people played at either the World Fair or the Olympics, it counts.
And I'm just yes or no. Yes or no is a viable answer here?
Correct.
Simple enough.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah. Yes.
Running deer shooting.
Running deer shooting. I think you'll start with a yes.
It is a yes. It was.
But
a,
now I'm just playing mind games.
It like, is an Olympic. It was an Olympic sport in 1908 and 1948.
That's a big gap.
Tap dance.
40-year gap for running deer shooting.
Tap dance.
Wonder why they brought it back. I'm gonna say no.
Correct. Ballooning.
Ballooning. What's ballooning?
Was it a sport or not?
I'm gonna say no.
It was a sport at the World Fair. It's like high. It's like.
Okay, like, so that's like a half.
Balloons.
Like a half, yes.
No, it counts. It counts. okay.
Yeah.
This is hard to guess what is going to be good or not. Your guessing has been better than I thought. Okay.
I just think it's your ordering.
Yeah. Pigeon racing.
Clean the slate. I think pigeon racing is a yes.
Oh, yeah. 1900s, baby. They were racing pigeons.
Which is, did the pigeons get the medals?
No, because the horses don't get them now. Tug of war.
I think it was a yes based on yesterday.
Used
right?
to be used to be an actual Olympic sport.
When did they okay, do the
I don't
tug
have
of
the
wars?
Not.
Well, you had it.
I don't work for Wikipedia.
You had it for the others.
It was 1920, last time.
Okay.
Motorcycle racing.
I think that's a no.
That was
really.
Yep. Yep.
It goes against the spirit of the Olympiad.
Chess.
No.
It was.
Damn.
It was an Olympic sport. Firefighting.
Firefighting. Ah. I could see them being like, these are the people we want to like offer something to and come over and show us your stuff. I'll say yes.
It was one time at the 1900 Summer Olympics. The winners?
It's a little bit of a dangerous activity.
The winners were United States.
Setting up fires to extinguish.
And Portugal. They won. Okay.
Any through lines between those?
No. Three-legged race.
Hmm. I'll say no.
It wasn't. Damn. Checkers.
No.
Correct. Roller hockey.
No.
Yes.
Really?
It was an Olympic sport. Justin.
You got it up. Just tell me.
I don't have it. I have the clue. 1992. Wow.
Really?
That was recently.
Roller
hockey?
It
was roller hockey at the 1992 Olympics. Argentina won. Spain came second. And Italy got the bronze.
I know you are not going to have it, but I wonder how Canada did in that.
Canada does not look like they participated.
How did we not have a roller
I don't know.
Hockey team?
I'll have to look into it. I didn't have the history
Brampton
of sports
had it.
In
Brampton,
front of me.
Just Brampton could have had the gold medalist for that.
Yeah.
Brampton can play some inline.
Motorboating.
Sorry? Say one more time.
Motorboating.
Motorboating.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was. Good one. Okay. How many more? You want a couple more?
I want them all.
Solo synchronized swimming.
Yes.
It was. Kite flying.
Yeah.
Yes. I wish they'd bring these things back. Dodgeball.
Ooh. I'm going to say no.
No. Did you get this list before?
No, I just think I can pick up on your pattern here.
There's no pattern.
I think
going
there's a
from
pattern.
16 different pages on my screen.
You should have randomized these.
Ski ballet.
Ski ballet. No.
It was. And the videos are actually hilarious.
What's the craziest one we've mentioned so far?
I don't know.
What was the deer one?
deer shooting. Deer running shooting.
Deer running shooting. I'm gonna YouTube deer running shooting before.
I think it was from 1900. The there night. Might not be YouTube there.
So, well, no, they probably have reenacted though.
Oh, life saving.
I'm gonna say yes.
Life saving was a real thing, and I think I don't want to know who lost that. Like,
are we using live bodies to save?
I don't know. Anyway,
they could do that in Tahiti.
That was
this year.
The 1900 Summer Olympic Games. That one was lit. I need to go to the 1900 Summer Olympic like lineup and tell you because they went crazy that year.
They're probably like looking back. Scoffing at the breaking happening they were, in
they
Paris.
Were. There were. Okay, well, there's lots more fun to be had. Anyway, we can bring back some of those sports one day. Maybe not the running deer shooting.
Figure out a way. Do we have an update on the Blue Jays and Yankees?
It is delayed. So you get to listen to some rain delay talk.
So you
after
get some show Ali coming up
yeah,
here.
Yeah, baby. He's the king of rain delay. That could be an Olympic sport. He would win the gold.
He's the I think he already, it was a 4-hour delay once already this year.
He killed it.
He won the gold medal.
Okay, well, happy long weekend, everyone. We're here on Monday, too. We'll give you more Olympic sports that don't exist that did. Have a nice weekend. Maybe we'll golf. You think we're golfing?
Running. Shooting deer? What was it?
Oh, never mind.
I'm doing that this weekend.
Have a nice weekend.